grapes, peaches, apricots, all of startling size as compared with any I have ever saw before. Other streets were piled with sacks of flour, left out all night, owing to the security from rain at this season. I pass hastily over the early part of the journey. The crossing the bay in a fog as chill as November. The number of lunch baskets, which gave the car the look of conveying a great picnic party. The last view of the Pacific, on which I had looked for nearly a year. The fierce sunshine and brilliant sky inland. The look of long rainlessness, which one may not call drought. The valleys with sides crimson with the poison oak, the dusty vineyards, with great purple clusters thick among the leaves, and between the vines great dusty melons lying on the dusty earth. From off the boundless harvest fields the grain was carried in June, and it is now stacked in sacks along the track, awaiting freightage. California is a land flowing with milk and honey. The barns are bursting with fullness. In the dusty orchards the apple and pear branches are supported, that they may not break down under the weight of the fruit. Melons, tomatoes, and squashes of gigantic size lie almost unheeded on the ground. Fat cattle, gorged almost to repletion, shade themselves under the oaks. Superb red horses shine, not with grooming, but with condition. And thriving farms everywhere show on what a solid basis the prosperity of the Golden State is founded. Very uninviting, however rich, was the blazing Sacramento Valley, and very repulsive the city of Sacramento, which at a distance of 125 miles from the Pacific has an elevation of only 30 feet. The mercury stood at 103 degrees in the shade, and the fine white dust was stifling. In the late afternoon we began the ascent of the Sierras, whose saw-like points had been in sight for many miles. The dusty fertility was all left behind, the country became rocky and gravelly, and deeply scored by the streams bearing the muddy wash of the mountain gold mines down to the muddier Sacramento. There were long broken ridges and deep ravines, the ridges becoming longer, the ravines deeper, the pines thicker and larger as we ascend into a cool atmosphere of exquisite purity, and before 6 p.m., the last traces of cultivation and the last hardwood trees were left behind. Beginning a footnote. In consequence of the unobserved omission of a date to my letters having been pointed out to me, I take this opportunity of stating that I traveled in Colorado in the autumn and early winter of 1873, on my way to England from the Sandwich Islands. The letters are a faithful picture of the country and state of society as it then was. But friends who have returned from the West within the last 6 months tell me that things are rapidly changing, that the frame house is replacing the log cabin, and that the footprints of elk and bighorn may be sought for in vain on the dewy slopes of Estes Park. ILB. Author's Note to the Third Edition, January 16, 1880. End of footnote. At Colfax, a station of a height of 2,400 feet, I got out and walked the length of the train. First came two great gaudy engines, the Grizzly Bear and the White Fox, with their respective tenders loaded with logs of wood, the engines with great solitary reflecting lamps in front above the cow guards, a quantity of polished brasswork, comfortable glass houses, and well-stuffed seats for the engine drivers. The engines and tenders were succeeded by a baggage car, the latter loaded with bullion and valuable parcels, and in charge of two express agents. Each of these cars is 45 feet long. Then came two cars loaded with peaches and grapes, then two Silver Palace cars, each 60 feet long, then a smoking car, at that time occupied mainly by Chinamen, and then five ordinary passenger cars, with platforms like all the others, making altogether a train about 700 feet in length. The platforms of the four front cars were clustered over with Digger Indians, with their squaws, children, and gear. They are perfect savages, without any aptitude for even aboriginal civilization, and are altogether the most degraded of the ill-fated tribes which are dying out before the white races. They were all very diminutive, 5 feet 1 inch being, I should think, about the average height, with flat noses, wide mouths,